My name's Jim Bach. I'm an alcoholic.
Amen.
It's good to be here. It's really good to be sober. My sobriety date's November 19th, 1987. My home group is the sponsorship group. We meet Chatham in Chatham, New Jersey at 8:30 on Sunday nights. It's an awesome, enthusiastic meeting, and it's good to be here. It's an honor and a privilege to be able to do anything for Alcoholics Anonymous. I am. Few observations. We have an enthusiastic bunch as well, and are sitting up front watching the guys over here go like this. And I thought, with all the insurance concerns, how did you get them out of the mental hospital? Then I was thinking, wait a second, I'm speaking and they're offering CDs half price. Some welcome. and then one of my sponsees sent a CD to Chuck to listen to, and he didn't come. So I appreciate for the the enthusiasm up front. it's a privilege to be standing behind one of these things and not be entering a plea. My public speaking experience prior to Alcoholics Anonymous was in the courtroom. My problems with my thinking predate my drinking. And I need to talk about that because that's who I go back to when I stop drinking. I've got a problem with my perception and the way I think and the way I analyze. And, I do a hell of a lot of thinking. When I got out of rehab, I went back to feeling like I was in first grade. I was, restless, irritable, discontent. That sounds familiar. What it was like in first grade was that we moved from one school system to another, and I looked around at the kids, and I looked at the kind of sneakers they had to figure out how well they were doing. I looked at their jeans and their shirts and sort of weighed them up and tried to figure out exactly what I was dealing with. I always have to figure out what you guys are about before I'm willing to let you know who I am, because I'm desperate to be accepted. I suffer from this soul sickness, this loneliness, this horrible, horrible secret loneliness that is devastating. I think I'm probably the most lonely person in the world. I remember being in first grade and these kids looked like they had it together, and I wanted to so much fit in. I wanted to impress them because my idea has always been that if I create the right impression, you're going to like me. I've got to build up some sort of presentation. My life before Alcoholics Anonymous was an endless series of auditions. I've got to be liked. I've got to create the right impression. And it started, as best I can tell, in first grade. Because I'm looking at these kids and what should I show them? What should I deliver? And the teacher's asking the question, and it was halfway through the school year when, we switched schools, and I was thinking, okay, I know the answer to that. We had this material, and I put my hand up, and the teacher called on me, and she said I was wrong. And I was devastated, and I was embarrassed, I was humiliated, and I couldn't believe that I screwed up. And then I start looking around, and I steal a glance, of someone's eyes, and I start analyzing people, and I'm looking and trying to figure out what they're thinking about me. And what it really seems like is that I was born with a special ability that no one else seems to have. I mean, I can look at somebody and know they're a jerk. I can just look at somebody and know that they're just a waste of time. Why would I, and I can look at a girl and know I'm in love, like that. I have all these abilities that cause me to think a lot. And I'm looking around at these kids, and I'm embarrassed already, and I'm humiliated, and I think they're going to talk about me, and I don't know what to do, and it's horrible. And the teacher asks another question. I better redeem myself, and my hand darts up, and I answer that question. But then she said I was wrong. And now it feels like people are looking at me. I can feel the tension in the air. The anxiety's building. I'm measuring my breath. I think I'm hyperventilating. I look down at my shoes and I'm thinking, oh, geez. I have the terrible shoes, last year's model, and they noticed, and I'm sitting in the wrong seat, and I'm breathing too hard. I better slow down my breathing, and my hand's shaking, so I'll sit on my hand. And it couldn't have gotten any worse, but I had to go to the bathroom. Now, I role-played, I visualize, I sound things out before I take a risk of being rejected or judged. So what I'm thinking is I'll put my hand up, and the teacher's going to say, "Okay, retard, want to answer this question before you can go to the bathroom?" And I'm like, "Okay, I'm not going to do that." But she won't do that. Okay, I'll put my hand up, and then the whole class in unison is going to say, "She's not answering a question. Put your hand down, idiot." You know, and it's just horrifying. You know, and I've got good ideas. I've always got brilliant ideas. I mean, if my sponsor were here, he wouldn't agree. But I really do, and he's not here, so we'll go with this. I have really good ideas. Brilliant ideas. My idea that day is just pee your pants. So I'm sitting there, I'm going, ah. And for the first few minutes, it wasn't a bad idea. It was warm, relaxing. I was like, oh, God. Thank God I don't have to be humiliated again. And then it dawns on me, maybe you want to look down. And I look down, I'm thinking, well, that's a hell of a lot more than I thought. And then I also realized that this was first period. And it's going to be a long day. Now, that's what it's like when I'm sober. Just to give the new guy some hope. I always think it's going to get better. It's going to get better. It's going to come together. It's going to be my day. I know it's going to come together, but, you know, it's like the next year. And it hasn't come together yet, but it's coming together. And the teacher comes in, and she hands out a book to everybody in the class. And she says, "Good news, kid. We've got this little storybook, and everybody gets to read a paragraph out loud, and we're going to cancel today's lesson." And everybody's really excited, and, everything's going well. You know, except for me, I'm freaking out. I'm like, out loud. I would have called in sick. You know, I would not be here if I knew we had to do this out loud. So I'm getting ready. I count the kids. I count the paragraphs. Screw the story. I'm gonna get this right. You know, I don't care what you guys are saying. I'm gonna read my paragraph. I'm gonna practice it. I'm gonna rehearse it. I'm gonna be ready for when it gets to me. And it's coming. It's getting closer and closer. And I'm freaking. And I'm breathing. And I'm panicking. And I think I can do it. I think I really can do it. I can do this. But it's getting closer. And some girl like three seats over reads three paragraphs. Now I don't know what the normal response is. But from my history, I've discovered that aggravated assault is not the answer. Okay? It's my response when I get screwed like that is to make them suffer like I'm suffering. And I'm always hoping that my life's going to come together. And it's not coming together. Day after day, week after week, month after month, year after year, I have this perception of reality problem. I have this spiritual malady. I have this problem where I can't connect with you guys. Forget about connecting with God. I can't connect with anybody. I'm on the outside looking in. I mean, it would be a lot better if everybody were to treat me like it was my birthday every day. Okay? Maybe if you bought me presents and sang to me and, you know what I mean? But nobody wants to play along. You know, I'm the kind of guy, I go to the wedding and everybody's paying attention to the bride. But I've got a new suit. Look at my suit. Okay? She's a whore. Okay? Look at me! Oh, right? And I am horrified because if you don't pay attention to me, if you don't treat me special, if you don't treat me like I'm king all the time, I feel like I'm being neglected. I feel like you're judging me. I feel like you don't like me. You know? And this goes on year after year after year. And I go to this dance and I'm like seventh grade and the girls on one side, guys on the other. And you know, we're making fun of the goofy kids. There's a guy and a girl out there. We're making fun of them at first. And it's not so bad. But other people are starting to dance. Now I'm trying to pick a girl. And I got to pick a girl that's going to say yes, who's not too embarrassing to be seen with. I mean, I would go on with any of them. Okay, but I don't want to be embarrassed. I don't want to be humiliated. I'm like throwing my soul away. You know what I mean? I'm looking and I'm figuring out what I'm going to say and what she's going to say and what I'm going to say to inflict as much pain if she hurts my feeling. Because I don't go down alone. right? And I'm like, oh my God, oh my God. And I'm getting ready and I'm freaking out. And finally, okay, I pick the girl. I know what I'm going to say. I know what she's going to say, or I hope I know what she says. And I have a couple responses to what she might say just in case. And if worse comes to worse, I can, you know, tell her she's fat. Okay? You know, or tell her she's got pimples, or tell her she's got a lisp, or she's got a space between her teeth, or whatever. I mean, I keep score. I have, like, this database of insults and just observations saved up for everybody because I am so afraid. I am so terrified. I am so alone. And I'm so protected. And I am on defense all the time. Right? And I'm at this dance, and I'm thinking, oh, my God, what am I? Okay, I know what I'm going to say. So I work my way out on the dance floor, and she's on the other side, and I'm getting closer, and I'm getting closer, and I freeze. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, look, you don't know how to dance. You know, and I'm trying to articulate in my mind what it's like to have rhythm. Okay. You know, and I can't figure it out. But I notice this guy over in the corner, he's bouncing up and down to the music, and I can bounce to the music. That's not hard. I can do it. Okay, yeah, okay. But I don't want to look just like him. Maybe I'll mix it up with a little bit of what this guy's doing over here. And he's like waving his butt, and you know, and I'm thinking if I do a little bit of this, a little bit of that, a little bit of this, a little bit, I'll just mix it all together, and I'll be like a star. Right? So I get my thing. I'm going, you know, I'm getting together. It looks like I'm having a seizure. People are like, what? People are actually stopping dancing to look at me and go, what are you doing? You know, and I'm like, oh, screw it, you know. And I go up and I stand against the wall and I'm gathering it. And I'm waiting for my next shot out there, but the dance is over. And I'm a loser and I'm on the outside and you guys are all on the inside and you guys are at the party. And what can I do? Why am I so broken? Why can't I talk to people? Why can't I communicate? Why can't I connect? What's wrong with me? What if God come down in kindergarten, a big joke when I was in the bathroom and give the life directions book out to everybody and say, shh, don't tell him. Here he comes. Because I don't know how to do this. I am completely incapable of connecting with another human being. I mean, I'm good at obsessions. I love obsessions. You know, I sports, believe me, I work out every single day. I was a sophomore. I was starting varsity football. I was attacking the quarterback. You know what I mean? I was obsessed. I mean, I could do really well scholastically. Okay? Really, really well. If I obsess. I make a lot of money if I obsess. Okay? But there always comes a point where I've got the big fancy car, where I've got the really beautiful girlfriend, or I got the great grades, and it's like, is that all? Is that all? Is that all there is? You know what I mean? And it's just not fulfilling enough. It's not enough. Nothing is ever enough, and I can't figure it out. I don't know why I'm so broken. And what happens is my life's about to change. Now, my first night drunk, you could have diagnosed me as alcoholic. My very first night drunk. Okay? Because what happens for me is that my body processes alcohol differently than normal people. My very first night drunk. What happened was this kid Mark calls me up, and Mark's a bad kid. I love bad kids. You know what I mean? If you're a good kid, you don't really want anything to do with me. Okay? Because you're going to come up and try to have a conversation, a normal conversation. Oh, how you doing? I'm like, fine. And it's like, if it goes beyond that, it's like way out of my depth. You know? And I think the guy wants to have sex with me or something. I'm like, get away from me. You know, I don't know how to do that. You know, and this kid calls me up. And he goes, Jimmy, I got a case of Budweiser and some girls. Now, he could have said a case of anything. It didn't matter. He could have said we're going to break the windows. He had said that the month before at the school, and I went with him. Okay, it didn't matter. I'm going along for the ride. I don't want to miss anything. It doesn't matter. I will throw away any sort of morals, any sort of code of conduct, any principle to not be alone. You know, and it was like the year before. Mark told me about this girl he liked, and he was describing her and telling me who she was, and I was like, oh yeah, she's beautiful. He said, who do you like? And I told him the girl I liked, and he laughed. And I had to like a different girl. It's as easy as that. I just change. Okay, it's career aspirations. If you don't think what I'm going to do for a living is a good idea, you think it's below your stature to hang out with somebody who might do that, I'll just change career aspirations. I do that with music. I do it with girlfriends. I do it with zip codes that I live in. I'll do it with anything. Okay? Because my life is an endless series of auditions. I want to be liked. I want to create the right impression. Right? And this kid, he goes, hey, I got a case of Budweiser and some girls. Now I'm not thinking about Budweiser. I really haven't gotten drunk. And you know, I'm sort of turned out off to the idea. Some kids in my town got drunk. They wrecked a car and five kids got killed. I'm not really interested in that. But the girls, geez, girls, whoa. You know, I'm 16 years old. I've been trying to get married since I'm five. And I'm thinking, oh, my God. And I saw Mark talk to Amy, and Amy sat next to me in homeroom. Mark was, he's talking to all these girls. And I saw him talk to her. And every day in homeroom for 2 years, I look over at Amy, and I'm thinking, oh, my God, I'm going to marry you. I love you. You are beautiful. What am I going to do to you? And, oh, my God, oh. But I still haven't talked to her. Okay? 2 years. Every day. Okay? I cannot even begin to add up the hours that I've thought about talking to her. You know what I mean? I don't know how to do it. I've tried. I've tried talking to girls. And I spit and I stammer. It seems like I got Tourette's. And inappropriate stuff comes out of my mouth. I don't know how to engage in that process. But I'm thinking, Amy's going to be there. Maybe, yeah, maybe. I hope. And then I was thinking about this other girl, Lisa, that I liked. And a little girl, Karen. I'm thinking, any girl who looked at me in the hallway, I fell in love with. So it didn't really matter, okay? So I'm excited. And I said, sure, come get me. You know, and so a car pulls up my road, up my driveway. I go running down, get close to the car. The back door opens up, and this girl hops out. And I take one look at her, and I'm thinking, get back in the car before the neighbors see you. And I'm thinking, where the hell's Amy? Now I look in the car, and it's that girl's sister. Now, one of my sponsees grew up in my town, and he knows these girls. And I told him, you know, early in sobriety who these girls were. And he almost crapped himself. He called them the Neanderthal sisters. Okay? Now, apparently they had a very close family. Okay? She goes, hop in the middle. And I was like, okay, you know, she's bigger than I am, I'm getting in. You know, I didn't think it was open for discussion. You know, I get in, and it was a hot August day, much like today down here. And we're driving, and there's no air conditioning, and it's hot, man. I look at my arm, this girl's leaning on me, she's sweating on me. I'm thinking, oh, she's just. Just hit a tree. I'll go through the windshield. It'll be over. Okay? This is horrible. I hope nobody sees me. All right? And then what was about to happen was my life was going to change. That night. See, what happened was Mark said, do you want a beer? And I'm thinking, sure. Why not? Everyone else is drinking. I'm not going to be like the guy they're laughing at and making fun of. So I cracked open a Budweiser. It's disgusting. It'd been in the bushes for a couple of days. It was like skunky. I was like, oh my God. But nobody else seemed to notice. So I keep drinking because I'm going to fit in. I'm going to do this. Okay. And I drank. And the first can, it was disgusting. It was horrible. I felt sick. I crushed up the can. I threw it on the floor. And Mark's like, oh, you want another one? And I'm thinking, I should have kept the can because I don't want to drink that again. Yeah, whatever. So I start sipping that one. I don't know if it was the second, the third, the fourth, the fifth beer. I don't remember how many I had, but something happened to me that does not happen to normal people. Because I'm drinking, all of a sudden I look over, she lost 15 pounds. I was like, no. All of a sudden, I said something. I don't know what I said, but I was smooth. Now, I was smooth. You know, I didn't have to think about it. I didn't have to work it out. I didn't have plans. I didn't care what she said. You know what I mean? I just came out, you know? And her response was totally different than the response I'm always getting. You know, the response I'm always getting is like, you're a pig. You know, what's wrong with you? You know, or there's like, you know, it's like, I'm trying to talk to this girl at different times in my childhood, and I'm thinking about what she said and what would be really smart to say, but she keeps talking, and so when I say something, it's no longer relevant. Right? But I was smooth that night, and she laughed, and she said something, and I laughed, and next thing you know, we're having a conversation. Now, that's a home run for a guy like me. Because what happened was alcohol brought me into the party. Alcohol gave me a solution for living that I didn't know existed. Alcohol allows me to plug into a power that I had not even known of, where I can do things, I can say things, I can feel things. I am no longer paralyzed by my mind. Right? And the problem is that when I start drinking, it's like opening Pandora's box. Because I have that effect, what they call it the phenomenon of craving. You know, talk about it in the doctor's opinion. Where I take a drink and the drink takes a drink. All bets are off. When I take a drink, I just don't know what the hell is going to happen. You know, I can't stop once I start. You can't tell. A friend of mine said it's like having sex with a gorilla. You're done when the gorilla's done. I'm drinking. I'm like, oh my God. Next thing you know, this girl and I, we're making out. And she's beautiful. She's gorgeous. She's hot. I love her. I'm in love. I have the hottest girl anywhere. I notice how beautiful her eyes are, the contour of her face. I see things that I just couldn't see before. I was so consumed, sober, with what everybody else thought that I couldn't even see this beautiful girl's beauty. Right? And what happens is, the problem is I keep drinking. And so the next thing you know, I'm kissing her sister. Oh, Jesus. Now she's upset, and I'm like, what? You don't like your sister? What? Is good enough for you? Is not good enough for your sister? What kind of person are you? Right? You know, I do the best to assure her there's enough to go around. Right? Next thing you know, I hit my first bottom. Now, bottoms don't get me sober because I'm an alcoholic and I can get used to anything. You know, my first bottom consisted of laying in a gravel parking lot. I got cinders on my tongue, rocks in my face, rocks in my chest, and one of these girls is stepping on my back. Apparently, I said something. I mean, it's okay for Jenny Craig to dish out a little advice. It's not okay for me. I mean, I am certain that this girl wasn't the only girl in need of electrolysis. Okay? I just call it like I see it. Right? She's upset. I'm getting squished like a bug. But I'll tell you, laying in a parking lot, gravel on my tongue, rocks in my face, in my chest, big girl standing on my back is a small price to pay for a guy like me to join the human race. I am willing to pay that price. I don't know how many parking lots I've laid in, but there's been a lot. Fast forward through my drinking. Next thing you know, I'm in the back of a squad car. And I'm wearing handcuffs, and the neighbors are looking, and I'm crouching down, and I'm embarrassed, and I'm humiliated, and I cannot believe that I got arrested. Oh, my God, Jesus, what are they going to do? What are you doing? Freaking out. Now, if that's the condition you come into Alcoholics Anonymous, I want to assure you the second arrest is so much easier. Right. Fast forward through my drinking. I mean, I'm getting arrested. I'm like, misdemeanor. You know? Because I can get used to anything. Fast forward through my drinking. Next thing you know, I'm getting evicted. Oh, my God, I'm getting evicted. Oh, what do? You got furniture, TV, and go. The second time you get evicted is a little bit easier. A little bit easier. You get evicted enough, the furniture is no longer an issue. Okay? It's me and a couple hefty bags. We're set. Okay? You keep drinking, and it, you know, it starts to dawn on you, if you're anything like me, and it's like, wait a second. Month and a half security, first month's rent, it's 2.5 months rent. It took them 5 months to throw me out. I doubled my money by not paying the rent. Brilliant. Fast forward through my drinking. One bad night, you know, it's like, oh, I don't even have drinking money. But some guy's buying drinks. I guess he got paid. He hit the lottery. He robbed some. I don't know what happened. This guy's buying me drinks. I don't want to insult the guy. So I keep drinking. And I'm driving. I'm driving pretty fast. I admit I'm driving a little fast. And I like to think the power steering was the issue. But my friend said I was doing about 95. And next thing you know, 50-foot of guardrail, a telephone pole, and two of my buddies in surgery. But I'll tell you, the second totaled car was not nearly as bad. You know, and I've been on a lot of total cars. Some I'm driving, some friends are driving. I'm an alcoholic. I can get used to anything. Fast forward through my drinking. Just drinking, no big deal. Just a couple beers, let's do some shots. We'll do some shots. Next thing you know, I'm in New York doing an armed robbery. Because it seemed like a good idea at the time. Fast forward through my drinking, one afternoon. Just drink a Budweiser. Now, Budweiser, I didn't even consider that drinking. Okay, I was like, drink Budweiser? That's not drinking. You know, it's like we had this guy come speak at our home group, and he's up here doing his little thing. He's talking about,
you don't, wait a second, I've heard your story. You drink vodka and Jack Daniels and gin and you do heroin and cocaine. Geez, they should have a special program for people that just drink beer. And I was sitting up front, I yelled out, they do. Al-Anon. I don't see why he doesn't return my call. We wanted to have him back. What happened this afternoon? I'm drinking a couple Budweiser. Not a big deal. Just kind of getting over the hangover. But somebody pulled out some Jack Daniels. Now, once you wet the pump, it doesn't matter if it's Listerine, cooking sherry, vanilla extract. It doesn't matter. If it's got alcohol, it will wake up the beast. Next thing you know, I'm drinking Jack Daniels. And I'm chugging Jack. I love Jack Daniels. That's like a full meal. It's like, you know, it's like, I go at Jack Daniels with like a thirst and a hunger. That, you know, and it's just, yeah. There goes a new girl. No. Anyway, what happens is I'm driving, you know, and we're driving. We get on, I don't know if anybody's from New Jersey, but we're driving down Route 10 through Danville and in the Parsippany area, and, you know, this guy's hitchhiking. So we pick him up, and then we decide to keep him. You know, because it seemed like a good idea at the time. When I drink, I have no idea what's going to happen. I'm an animal. I'm not a nice guy. I will destroy you. I will destroy you. I will hurt you in ways that I can't even imagine. Because when I'm drinking, I drink. I will drink. There's nothing you can do. There are no social consequences. There's nothing that's going to stop me from drinking. Because what happens is, not only did I have that phenomenon of craving, but I get this idea that I got to drink. I got to drink. Okay, you don't understand. I cannot feel this way. What happens is not only that normal sense of social anxiety that everybody else seems to suffer from, but all the things that I've done drinking or in pursuit of a drink is just, they're haunting me. You know, I have to drink. And I get the idea and I end up drinking. You know, through a series of situations, I find myself in 1987 in a rehab. And I'm in this rehab. This guy comes from AA, and he had 3 years sober. I was like, whoa, that's a long time sober. You're getting carried away there, pal. Yeah. But he talks about praying and saying a prayer to a God that he didn't believe in. You know? And he said, it doesn't matter. Go through the actions. Just take the action. He said, you know, and for the last 3 years I've been praying. You know, and I haven't picked up a drink. And I thought, well, maybe if you just have to pray. My problem was I couldn't believe in God. I understood this whole God thing. I wanted to have God. I wanted to have a solution. I wanted to be like these people that I saw going to church, living respectable lives. But I can't believe. How do you dumb down from a smart guy like me? Right? I don't know how to do it. He said, just get on your knees and say a prayer. And the next morning, I got on my knees and said a prayer to a God I didn't believe in. And I'll tell you, it's been more than 21 years since I've had a drink. And every day I get on my knees and I say a prayer to a God. This God has taken form. This God has changed. This God has evolved. I hear new ideas. I don't know exactly what it is. But I'll tell you, I've got a God working in my life that's just awesome. Just amazing. The most important thing I can say about sobriety is the necessity of sponsorship. My experience, this isn't theory, I'm not trying to tell you what, you know, any idea as far as, you know, what you guys ought to do, okay? But what happened was, I get out of rehab, I go to a meeting, I put my hand up, and I'm like, oh God, I need rides to meetings, I don't have a license. And some guy comes up to me after the meeting, and we go to the diner, you know, and he convinces me to go with these other guys, and I was really nervous, but he was a good member of Alcoholics Anonymous, because when it came to the point, I wanted to bail. I didn't have any money. And I put my hand in my empty pocket. He goes, no, my treat. You're new. You're supposed to be broke. If you weren't broke, we'd be suspicious. Right? And he laughed, and I laughed. I got in the car, I went to the diner. These guys were talking about all sorts of things they had done. And you did what? Shh, the waitress is coming. My life's a secret. I don't want anybody to know. Shh. But by the end of the night, I'm laughing along with these guys. And this guy, at the end of the night, he goes,
I'll pick you up. He's dropping me off at my house. I'll pick you up tomorrow at 7. And I'm thinking, how do you know I didn't have plans? But I didn't have plans. So he comes and gets me and drags me, you know, to meetings every single day. But I'll tell you, me going to meetings and not working steps is like me going to a bar and not drinking. It's only so good so far. It only lasts for a little while. The effect produced by meetings is awesome. It makes me know that I'm not alone, but it's not enough to cure this problem that I've got. And what happens is I'm getting crazier and crazier in Alcoholics Anonymous. And what happens is I go to a meeting and I'm doing, you know, I'm doing pretty well, but my new best friend's sitting next to somebody else. I'm thinking, what happened? You get this new puke out of rehab and he's got like 28 days and I got 32 days and I'm not the new guy. And I give him a little hex, you know, he's going out. Right? And I get home, you know, and people are starting to judge me. And I get home and my family's like, you know, Jim, we're really proud. At first, everybody's proud. They love me. So you're doing so well. You're getting sober at such a young age. You have so much potential. Oh, my God, it's so wonderful. And that turns into like, get a job. I'm like, oh, you know, just, oh, they're picking on me. Just, oh, Jesus. You know, my mom walks in with, you know, it's like a bag of mail one day. And she goes, oh, here, look at this. Why are you looking here? I'm going, what's that? And she goes, oh, well, I thought you might want to keep it. And like when I'm drinking, I just move around. I forget forwarding addresses. I don't want to be found. So I got like 3 years of unopened mail. And I got warrants from towns I've never been to. You know, it's horrible. Things are, it's just, oh, my God, and the noise in my head. And I go to a meeting and it doesn't stop it. And that night, I find myself wanting a drink, and I got a drink. And what I did was I picked up the phone. And I called this guy, and he was a good member of Alcoholics Anonymous, because at 1 o'clock in the morning, he picked up the phone. And I said, hey, how you doing? He goes, hello. And I go, hey, it's Jim, how you doing? He goes, oh, no good. I said, I didn't wake you, did I? And he lied. He said, no, you didn't wake me. What's going on? Now, you get a call from a guy at 1 o'clock in the morning who's new. He's dying. He goes, you want to come over? I said, be right there. Get my little sister's purple Schwinn with the basket and the bell, and I'm zipping over there, right? I get there, bang on the door, and what he did was different than any psychiatrist, psychologist, therapist that I've ever been to. I've been going to therapy sessions for 20 years. Everybody's like telling me all these things. Oh, how do you feel? And all these things, and I'm like, I don't know, sad? We'll go with that one. You know, because I can change my feelings like this. You know what I mean? It doesn't matter. It's like changing girlfriends. It's like, oh, yeah, that's fine. I love you. Oh, I love you. You know, I'm changing all the time. And nothing that I feel matters. Right? And he's, you know, I can't tell the truth. Because what happens is I tell them how I'm doing. And then I get really honest. And then they want to, like, do something with me. I don't know. They judge me. I got to change the end of my story. You know, and what happened was this guy, you know, he looked me in the eyes and he started telling me his story. 1 o'clock in the morning, he didn't grill me, he didn't ask me what's wrong. He started telling me his story. He told me about getting sober in New York, and he told me about an event. He said, you know, one night we were out and drinking, and we were in this cab, and another cab smashed into that cab. And next thing you know, the cab driver got out, he said, I got tired of waiting, I took the cab. I was like, oh my God, this guy's an attorney, and he's stealing cabs. He's pretty cool, I could roll with him. Right? He said, next thing you know, we're in the tombs. I'm thinking, oh my God, in the tombs, he knows about the tombs. Oh. He said, they had me shackled. Shackled. Oh, I hate shackles. Right? He said, yeah, there's a woman on the east side. I said, what? He said, well, I looked down, they had big hands. I looked up, and they had Adam's apples. I was like, whoa. And next thing you know, and I'm telling him a story. No idea, I wasn't going to tell anybody anything, but it slipped out. I figured he could identify. I said, well, that's nothing. One night I'm out drinking. Next thing you know, I'm chasing this transvestite around Washington Park with a hatchet. He's like, what? Now, if this guy was really trained as a therapist, psychiatrist, psychologist, he might have said something along the lines of, why don't you explain the series of events that led up to the chase, Jim? But he was a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. What he did was he laughed. I mean, after all, I just wanted my money back. Anyway. What happened this night was we went back and forth, tit for tat. He told me a story, some sexual escapade that would have made Jeffrey Dahmer blush. You know, I'm like, oh my God, this guy's sick. You know, oh Jesus. But then I started laughing and I told him one. You know, and that went back and forth. And at the end of it, about an hour and a half, this guy knew more about me than 20 years of therapists combined. Now that's the beauty of Alcoholics Anonymous, because I walked out of there smiling ear to ear. And I haven't wanted to pick up a drink. There's no desire. I could be real for the first time because this guy did, you know, something that was just magical that you guys do in Alcoholics Anonymous. He laid down his armor. There was no defense. It's like looking at a little baby. They have no armor. Everybody wants to, oh, hi. You know, there's nothing to be afraid of. And that's what he did for me. And that allowed me to stay sober. It allowed me to be real. It allowed me to follow some directions that I didn't quite understand. You know, and I'll tell you, my life has been good. I'm going to shut up right now, but I want to thank you guys for having me speak. My life in Alcoholics Anonymous has been phenomenal. I've had some times where it's been hell because I didn't want to help people. But when I help people, it's always good. You know, the recovery is in my feet. It's not in my head. It's not figuring things out. It's not studying. It's in my feet. The recovery is always going to be in my feet. You know, and the big book is like a cookbook. You look at the recipe in the cookbook. If your cake doesn't look like that, it's not the book's fault. So anyway, thanks for letting me share.